Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
To the Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th, 2013, located in Jacksonville, Florida. 3 days of executing and planning of executive plans for 25-year agenda, operating as an economic unit. The presenters will be Shem L. of the Tamarite 2 Project, Dr. Ali Muhammad and Minister Inky of the Black Genetic Tour, Sundiata Amma L., Professor Isef Deanham L., Tahaka Amana L., Abundance Child, Fatima, the Alchemist Shabazz, Messiah L., and more. Topics will be the execution of urban geoponics, creating independent distribution systems, creating independent economic systems, genetics, private security force, the wholesale and manufacturing of natural products, Morristown, creating one in every state. Moore's Eastside Farms, putting one in every state. You do not want to miss this summit. It is very enlightening, empowering, and most of all, it's applicable. Everything that we talk about, we do. Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th. Log on to www.summitofthemoors.com. You can register for free. The summit is always free. You can also get your hotel room, which will be on the river at the Wyndham Hotel. That's www.summitofthemoors.com. The summits are always free. See you at the summit.
It's now official, Moors. The brothers and sisters have been contacting me all over the United States asking me, when are you guys going to get something to help us deal with the Internal Revenue Service? I'm here to tell you, officially, we do. Go to http://www.newfreehelpgroup.com. You see, to get rid of the Internal Revenue Service package right there waiting on you. Okay, now, Amos, going directly into the month of July, for those of you who have problems with your mortgage, you got student loan debt, you got that child support hanging on, and we're going to cancel those contracts. And for those of you who are trying to do that, before you do anything, call me at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Now, if you just want the most powerful archives in America, go right there to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. That's www.newfreehelpgroup.com, and give me a call, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, at 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we'll get you some aid on that thing, okay? All right.
Hawker Moors, the Moors Talk Live 100. I'm your host, the Hawker Amana L. Bay, and this evening we will be dealing with debt collectors. Now, we have done this before, but today we're going to present some information here, and we want you to, maybe a good idea if you get your pen and paper handy so you can copy some of this stuff down. We will be also talking about the infamous affidavit as well. We're going to be dealing with the following questions. What do you say when debt collectors call by phone? How do you handle presentments by mail? How do you handle a lawsuit by a debt collector? These questions are much more going to be answered this evening, so you all book your seatbelt and stay tuned. Now, first of all, let me start off by saying that we are offering our free articles as usual. The 14th Amendment Exposed, as well as the Commerce Game, the U.S. Bankruptcy and the Moors, also Secrets of America, and the U.S. Supreme Court's decision on being able to set up your own grand jury, the people's grand jury, is very, very important for us to understand what's available to you. Also, August the 16th through the 18th, right here in Jacksonville, Florida, Summit of the Moors, too. Make sure you are here, because this will be an excellent opportunity for us to meet, and you walk away with a great deal of information that you can actually use, okay? Now, when we deal with debt collectors, and usually what they do is they call you by phone. And a lot of us regard that as a nuisance. We get on the phone, we don't feel so good. We don't want to talk to them, blah, 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 blah. We want to hang up on them, we want to argue with them, and all this stuff. But to be honest with you, there is a remedy. Actually, you should get excited about it, because if a debt collector contacts you by telephone, you do not have to tell that debt collector not to call you again. All you do is get up a simple letter, mail it, find out from them where their mailing address is, mail that letter to them, just regular first-class mail, requesting that they do not contact you again, and put your telephone number in there. Now, at that point, you send them a copy, you got a copy, okay? The Fair Debt Communication Practices Act is now officially in your favor. So if you have sent that to them and they continue to call you, the only thing that you do is you make a notation of the call number and the time and the date that they call. Then you contact the telephone company and tell them after a couple of months, I would let it go for at least 2 months, have them send you a printout of all the incoming and outgoing calls to your resident. And when you get that, you simply highlight the calls from this collection agency. Attach a copy of your letter that you sent to them, which is dated and signed by you, and a copy of the Fair Debt Communication Practices Act, and highlight the spot where they're by law. They're not calling. Okay, attach your affidavit to this thing. Let them know how much you're seeking in damages for each call. I recommend that you charge $5,000 per call, which is per violation. That's how you do that. You don't have to get excited about it. You don't have to get mad with them. Just send them a letter, just explaining to them to please remove my number from your calling list, and please do not call this number again. Okay, if they continue to do that, they have violated the Telephone Communication Practices Act. Let them know how much you're seeking in damages. Have them respond within 20 days, and don't be surprised if you do get a call from the management and trying to make a settlement long before you ever get in the courtroom, because this is designed to settle this thing out of court, okay? Now, that's how you deal with that. But we're going to look at some of the different ways that they contact people, and we're going to come back and deal with what happens when one of them tries to sue you. We're going to deal with all these things. Now, keep in mind, we do have remedies for this stuff. Read at www.newfreehealthgroup.com, okay? Remedies for this is at newfreehelpgroup.com. We will be putting this information in the chat room. We're going to open up the lines after the first hour of this broadcast. So that if you got questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand at that time, and we will open up the lines so you can tell us what you think about this thing. Okay? All right.
2 to 11. Join us live from Sugarland for a pregame party. Dan Pastorini and the Texans cheerleaders help kick things off. Countdown to kickoff, Texans Jets, Monday at 7 on 2 to 11. You're watching KHOU 11 News at 10 with Greg Hurst, Lisa Hernandez, Chief Meteorologist Gene Norman with weather, and Butch Alcindor with sports. KHOU 11 News at 10.
They say it can happen to you. A porn company threatens to sue you and name you publicly.
So what did you do? Victims tell the 11 News I-team absolutely nothing. But as investigative reporter Scott Knoll found, what some call a shakedown by some adult film companies is happening more and more in our area.
More than 1,000 people in the Houston area have been threatened with being named in court papers saying they illegally downloaded porn. Unless, of course, they settle and pay these X-rated companies thousands of dollars. But we found some people saying enough is enough. Scott Knoll from Channel 11. Just want to ask you about these copyright lawsuits.
To most, Doug McIntyre is just another attorney. But to some, he's public enemy number one.
I've said to these attorneys more than once, bring it on.
In court, she's simply called John Doe, one of 56 internet addresses accused of illegally downloading and sharing porn. That's according to a lawsuit filed by McIntyre on behalf of the adult movie company First Time Videos, LLC. Because her case is still in the courts, her attorney asked we not use her name.
It felt like a shakedown from the first letter that we got from this law firm.
That's because she insists she didn't do anything wrong.
The time and the date they allege that we did this, we were sitting in front of the TV watching Survivor finale with our 12-year-old daughter.
It's why she's ignored the repeated messages from lawyers.
Our client's offer to settle is now expired, but our client did ask that we give you a call prior to filing a lawsuit with your name in it.
A lawsuit linking her with porn. A fear she accuses attorneys of preying on, offering quick settlements, $3,400, to make it all go away.
They're not accusing you of downloading Bambi. They do it with porn because they know people are embarrassed and ashamed, and even if they didn't do it, they don't want to be associated with it.
Don't want to be associated with lawsuits like the one filed against Thomas Vaughn from Pasadena.
They say that you illegally downloaded the movie Virgins 4. An adult movie.
Never seen it. Never heard of it.
Vaughn has no idea how he ended up accused of illegally downloading anything.
I use my internet mostly. I play fantasy football. That's about all I do on my internet.
You're a tech-savvy guy?
No. My extent of training, I took a course on Windows 2000 just so I could learn how to operate the computer, basically. And that's about all.
So how are people who say they didn't download anything ending up in court? Attorney Ken Henry says it's nothing but a giant fishing expedition, one led by adult movie makers and their lawyers looking for quick cash.
These people are ruthless. They don't care whether they get it right or not.
Henry represents clients who say they were wrongly included in John Doe's suits. He's filed a class action lawsuit against 5 adult movie companies, accusing them of fraud, defamation, and intentional infliction of emotional distress resulting from the lawsuits. As proof of his claims, Henry points to this federal court order issued in a John Doe case. In it, attorneys admit 30% of the time, subscribers named in lawsuits did not download or share material. Henry estimates the number of wrongly accused at a 250,000 people.
To accuse somebody of doing something when you have the thinnest reed of any kind of proof and to try to extract from them money, it's below the standard of any kind of professional activity that I would certainly want to be involved in.
In Houston, Attorney McIntyre has filed 25 different John Doe lawsuits since June 2011, involving nearly 1,700 people.
What would you say to the people that say these are basically just shakedown tactics?
I can't comment on any of that. It's a long story.
Well, can we schedule some time to sit down and discuss it?
No, I don't have any time.
You don't have any time at all for us?
Not for you, no.
In the meantime, defendants can only wait.
I have several friends that are concerned that, you know, it could happen to them, and it could. It honestly could happen to anybody.
Wait to prove their case to a judge and jury.
We knew we hadn't done anything wrong, and we knew that paying these people was, we were giving into extortion.
We should point out, First Time Videos LLC is not connected to a Houston company with a similar name. In court, the head of one of the adult movie companies claims his company's movies are illegally downloaded more than 100,000 times each month, which hurts their business. And says,
okay, Mose, we back now. And you can see the criminals are at it again. So, you have to be cognizant. You have to pay attention to these people. Also, when you get stuff in the mail, they'll send you stuff in the mail, and you crack that open, and you discover, I have discovered on more than one occasion, that if somebody is saying I owe them money that I know absolutely nothing about. So, what do? Go ahead and crank out you a little letter, attach a copy of what they sent you, and ask them to prove the debt. Please provide a wedding signature clearly showing that I contracted with you at some given point in time, and please provide a bill clearly showing I owe you a bill, not a statement, a bill. Okay? That's how you deal with these people. You have to get these people off of you because these are criminals, and they're using the mail, they're using the telephone, they're using the internet. They're robbing people at every conceivable angle. But you got to make sure that you are not a victim. And the way you become not a victim is by fighting back. When they deal with you, you deal with them. As soon as they mess with you, you jump on them immediately. Don't let no 2 or 3 days go by. Whatever it is, go ahead and say, wait a minute, hold on, let me take care of this right now. And deal with them. Okay? That's how you deal with these kind of folks.
The slumping economy means something of a boom time for bill collectors. They come out of the woodwork, and sometimes their methods aren't always polite or, as it turns out, legal either. Tonight, some victims of aggressive bill collectors with only one place to turn. Tappy Phillips and Seven on your side.
Day after day, week after week, I keep getting the phone calls, I get the letters.
Evelyn Jack was being hounded by a debt collector.
I was stressed, I lost sleep over it. I just couldn't understand, where did this come from?
The debt collector told her it was for a MasterCard charge in 1994, but Evelyn had no credit cards back then.
94, I just graduated high school.
Did you have any credit cards when you graduated?
No, I didn't have any credit cards.
One of the more frequent complaints we get is simply harassment.
What Evelyn didn't know was that there are laws to protect her.
What the debt collector can't do is threaten to sue you because they know that that debt is time barred.
And there's a statute of limitations. In New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, generally debts expire after 6 years. But that doesn't mean collectors can't ask for it. Just don't make a payment promise.
If you've got a 20-year-old debt and the debt collector starts harassing you about it, and you say, okay, I agree to pay X amount to settle this, you've created a brand new obligation.
And there's a new trick collectors are trying.
She kept going on and on. Could you please help me? Please help me.
Carolyn Montague was called by a debt collector who tried to convince her to contact her next-door neighbor who owed money.
I felt like I was being harassed. I'm not the one that owes this person money, nor am I the person getting paid to get the money.
And she was right. It's against the law.
There's no reason for them to be calling your neighbor. It seems to us that it's probably just an effort to perhaps embarrass you into paying a debt.
If a debt collector is bothering you for a debt you don't owe, complain to them in writing. You have just 30 days from the date they first contacted you, and send it return receipt requested so you have a record of that. For more information on your rights against debt collectors, check our website, 7online.com. Tappy Phillips, Channel 7 Eyewitness News.
Okay, there you have it. Now, as you can see, these people here, they go through all types of length, all kind of tactics for robbing you. I mean, this is nothing more than, this is what you call extortion and racketeering. This is exactly what they are doing. But they lead you to believe that this is some type of legal or lawful obligation that you're supposed to pay. That's simply not true. Because if you look at any presentments that come through the mail to you, you'll discover that it is addressed to a fictitious entity that appears in all capital letters. So they're not dealing with a man or a woman. If you say a fiction owe you something, well, okay, how are you going to go about getting what you need from the fiction? Because that's exactly what they are doing. Now, if you don't believe me, check out the spelling of your name, address, city, state, and zip code as they send you these presentments. Now, what we're going to do is let's see how what's causing us to be in this in the first place. What kind of problem that could cause somebody to have to stoop to this kind of
one thing I've noticed going on here in Los Angeles, okay? People, a lot of people have lost their homes. They're not making their payments on their cars. And, you know, I found out here people are actually selling their junk gold and melting it down to pay bills. That's going on right now, right? It's going on right now. Okay, so as far as things go, I totally believe in having food storage. That's why I made a video on wheat. People should have some extra food storage. And so instead of having $10,000 in the bank and going to McDonald's every day, I would buy some extra food and have 2 or 3 months of food around. Just basic common sense. So it depends where your assets are. A lot of people don't have $10,000 in the bank anymore. But even for $100, you can go buy some basic food commodities. And if you're a more well-heeled person, yeah, I would buy corn futures. I would buy wheat futures. So I'd get food. Food is something that is necessary. In economics, it's called, there's prices that are flexible and inflexible. The food prices, people have to have food. They're going to buy it no matter what the price. If a sandwich costs $50 and you're starving, you're going to figure out how to get to $50 to buy some food.
I think food is going to be the first to shoot up, and gold will follow. I don't think gold will shoot up first and then foods. I think food will shoot up first.
Gold's already shooting up.
Food shot up double what gold shot up.
Explain.
I don't care about these futures and commodities when it comes to foods. It's what I see people pay for. Like with how foods are selling at the grocery store. It's selling at double what it used to. So while the futures and the agriculture looks like that, but the companies are making double their profit because they're charging double. They won't part with their potato chips for 50 cents anymore. They're going to have to charge you a dollar for it. While the commodity index doesn't say it, they're charging you a dollar for it. So they're making double what they used to make.
Why is that?
I mean, they buy the same product at the same price, right? Let's say potatoes. They're buying a bushel at the same price. They've been charging 50 cents. But now they're charging a dollar for it. Same thing with Hostess cakes, even those little things. That's where you see the real inflation go up. Things that people always gravitate towards. Cigarettes, comfort food, alcohol. You're going to see alcohol go up next year too, you know? It's purely, commodity based.
American consumers are noticing as prices are going up. And one of the things economists aren't talking about is that here, by their own admission, we are facing the mother of all contractions, the greatest contraction since the last depression. Ben Bernanke, everyone's admitted that. But the question nobody's asking is, then why aren't we seeing prices going down? If we're seeing debt contract, if we're seeing debt accumulation contract, consumer spending contract overall, but for some reason we're missing that key component to a real contraction, and that's a decrease in prices. That's what we're not seeing. So what that tells you is because of all the inflation, which is by definition an increase in the money supply, we are seeing prices either go up a little bit or not go down, and that's a problem.
But we've seen a decrease or a collapse in Southern California in real estate prices, so we've seen some collapsing.
Well, just like in any downturn, just like the Weimar Republic, you'll see a contraction in some prices and mainly non-need items. And, of course, the housing market is something unique because it already experienced crazy inflation, crazy price increases over the last 8 years, and now those things are starting to come down. but they should actually be even lower than where they are. But because of the artificially low interest rates set by the Federal Reserve, because of the bailouts, and because of, you know, all these kind of government entitlement programs where they give people $8,000 to buy a house, because 80% of mortgages right now are being supported by the Treasury Department or Fannie and Freddie or FHA. So right now you have prices not going down where they should go. You know, you still have a situation where the average American can't afford a home. I mean, seriously, people say homes are low, you know, at $100,000 in Southern California, but why are there so many properties on the market? Because people still can't afford them. The affordability is still rough for people. And, you know, if somebody makes $28,000 in a certain part of Southern California or $50,000 in Southern California, that means the average home should be roughly three times their income, their average income historically. But if you go to places where income is $28,000 a year in Southern California, the homes are still roughly $250,000. If you go to a place like LA County where the average income is roughly $55,000, homes are still $300,000, $400,000. So we still haven't reached a historical affordability level because they are keeping those prices of homes propped up. They should actually be even lower than they are right now.
And most Americans, their main asset is their home. Okay, the people that are homeowners, and those continue to go down. They're still artificially being held up, so there is deflation in home prices. So we got deflation in home prices, but inflation in food prices. And I think we'll see tremendous inflation in food prices going forward the next few months.
Most of the products that's made in the stores, especially our foods, is not made in the U.S. Most of the stuff comes from Mexico. Mexico is one of our biggest food creditors. So we're borrowing a ton of money from Mexico just for food consumption. Mexico is our creditor nation now. Isn't that kind of funny? And so is China, Pakistan, India, and Brazil. We get a lot of our food stuff from there. 99-cent type of items, whether it's toothbrush, toothpaste, lint roller, lighters, every single thing is made in China. Nails are made in China. You're telling me we can't mine a piece of nail and make a piece of nail in Arkansas somewhere and make it cheaper than China? How does that make sense? It's cheaper for Chinese to make the nails, pay everyone, import it, export it, pay all the tariffs, and then sell it to us. It's cheaper. Some of my, all the ice creams that we sell, all Mexican products, made in Mexico. Most of the chips are made in Mexico. Most of the sodas are bottled in Mexico and shipped over here. When I buy a pack of 24 cases of Coke from the Los Angeles bottling company of Coca-Cola, I buy it for $24 a case. You know, a case like two flat. If I buy the same thing from a Coca-Cola that was imported from Mexico in the downtown area, I could get it for $18. How does Coke flying, syrups flying from Atlanta to Mexico and bottling it there and importing, I mean exporting it to the U.S., how is that cheaper? Taxation. That's the inflation tax that killing everybody in the U.S. But as you can see, that's the reason why everything is being coming from other countries. We can make it here, but with all our regulations, taxes, and everything, it's just not profitable enough. It's forcing the companies to move to other countries.
So when people think that the United States is a free market, it is not a free market. In fact, one of my viewers over in China, you know, we started talking about stuff because, you know, China really wasn't a free market two decades ago. He said, dude, you know, you think you're a free market. We're a lot more free over here in China than you are. In a lot of ways, there are. There's tons of government regulations, George. Just on a loaf of bread, there's like 300 different taxes between that wheat being harvested in the field until you know, get that loaf of bread in the store. All kinds of taxes. We're being taxed to death here in the United States of America. Just think, if I bought a house here in Beverly Hills for, I could have bought a mansion here 30 years ago for, let's say, $100,000. Probably a pretty nice one 30 years ago. Well, $100,000, let's say my property taxes were 2.5%, so they'd be, what, $2,500 a year. So let's say I'm living on retirement and I'm still making $3,000 a month and I'm an older person, I'm 80 years old. Well, what happens if they raise the property tax? They say, well, that house is actually worth, you know, $1 million now. So your property taxes now are $25,000 a year. Does that wipe out that person on a fixed income? Absolutely. So all over America, I know in Utah, property taxes, some places are $700 on a piece of property. Boom, $4,000. People's property taxes have been raised all over Utah. I know that because I've seen them. And in other places, property taxes are being raised. So the power of taxation can destroy somebody that even thinks, hey, I'm set, I'm free and clear, I got my house. Now you got to deal with property taxes. So unfortunately, the American consumer with all this tax and spend stuff, doesn't matter Democrat or Republican. It matters, you know, tax. I mean, the taxes keep going up and people are saying, hey, I'm paying 50% taxes, 55%. Now what, I got to pay $7,500 to get covered in health care? What about if I want to be healthy and I don't need a ton of health care? I got to pay for the guy that's like totally wiping out his life and spending $100,000 medical bills. I got to pay that. That's messed up. And what, they want to put us in jail possibly if we don't pay the $7,500. $7,500 isn't pocket change for every American family struggling right now.
The Chinese investors who's holding the dollars, who's, you know, putting their money into the U.S., you know, buying up properties, it's already been happening, but they're losing out big time. Because any money that they were putting in, all the regulation fees, property taxes, liens, you know, they could, well, there was a group of investors that bought, what, 1,000 houses in Detroit for like $5,000 a pop. But turns out, you know, they owe $30,000 in city fees. City fees. So how's anybody supposed to invest in America again when all our county, state, federal wants a piece of that cut? At the inflated property prices. Not this, you know, prices that's dropping now. They want the highest appraised value from, you know, 2-3 years ago. Property tax will get you and your family and your grandkids.
One of the reasons the stimulus isn't creating jobs is because the stimulus plan won't let job creation happen. See, if we didn't have the stimulus right now, we would have prices contracting. Consumers could actually start buying stuff. Let's say prices really contract. Let's say we didn't have 0% interest rates for the banks and we didn't have an $8,000 giveaway and cash for clunkers. What would happen? You'd see prices drop. You'd see car automobiles drop. You'd see overall prices drop, goods drop. And this would actually create a scenario where thriving businesses would do really well. Healthy businesses would do really well. They'd be able to hire more people. Yes, you'd have the excess, the bad businesses, the businesses that shouldn't stay open, close. But overall, you'd see businesses actually be able to grow through the depression because people would be able to still buy their goods. People could afford stuff. People could buy more homes. Imagine how much inventory we would have if homes in Southern California were allowed to fall to their real value. Maybe they fell to $50,000 or $75,000. You would actually have a lot of buyers, a lot more buyers than just this stimulus plan that, you know, it's like the $8,000 tax credit for home buyers. They call it a tax credit for home buyers. It's really a tax credit for sellers because the buyers, it's in their interest for prices to drop, but that's not letting prices drop because it's creating an artificial demand. It's actually keeping the sellers happy because it's keeping their houses a little higher in value because there's an artificial demand for buyers. So the stimulus always creates an artificial demand, and when you have an artificial demand, the market can't work through this depression. It can't work itself out. But the fact is, in economics, there's no such thing as a jobless recovery, and you certainly can't borrow your way to prosperity. If that worked, then we wouldn't even be in the downturn we're in right now. Because if you look at the Dow Jones and then you look at the accumulation of credit card debt over the last 30 years, they mimic each other. If you look at the baby boomers' peak spending habits and the Dow Jones adjusted for inflation, they mimic each other.
As a store owner, I go to the 99-cent store and try to shop for, you know, new products, or I need to fill up my shelves. A lot of products that's missing. A lot of the staple items that used to be there all the time, they're missing. No one has a word. Hey, when's the dog food going to come in? Well, you know what? It hasn't come in for like the last 2 months. I see empty shelves at the warehouses where the dog food used to be, because dog food was, I guess, apparently it came from China, and, you know, they wouldn't release the bulls from the ports. They just turned it back to China. So that line of dog food that they used to have, real cheap at the 9S store, is gone. No more. Now we only got that Pedigree brand.
So it's not being sold at a higher price. What's happening, you're seeing products just disappear.
Yeah.
Explain that dynamic again.
Well, on their way from China or India, there might be a, you know, 2-3% depreciation on the dollar. I mean, in this current time, for them, that's a huge loss for the time that's coming here. And then now their products are not really flying off the shelves. What's the point? When they got a consumer base as strong as the United States now, they got to feed 1 billion people. They got a consumer base of 1 billion. So now their standard of living is rising. It's going to get to a point where their money is almost equal to ours. And they're going to be like, hey, why should I, you know, spend all my time and effort and tariffs and send it to U.S. when I could just sell it here now? It's just like the Olympics, the Chinese Olympics, right? All the newscasters went there. There wasn't any English-speaking guides. They'd never seen that before. Like, you got all these tourists coming. How come you don't have any guides that speaks English? And you know what the guide said? Why do we need any tourists? We got 1 billion people coming to our thing, and they all speak Chinese. So it was like, screw the English speakers. We got all the guides speaking different province dialects, because Chinese have a lot of dialects too. We're going to service our Chinese audience. Forget the world. They don't need the world to consume their products anymore.
Well, we know historically that wages over the last 30 years have not kept in line with inflation. And, you know, the government can show us CPI. They can show us this fake inflation where, you know, if Americans buy steak 1 year and then steak goes up, they'll swap it for hamburger meat because of hedonics. And then the Boston Commission, after 1996, when they started changing a lot of our numbers even more drastically than they did prior to that, you know, they can use that CPI. But if you look at real inflation, you look at these alternative private statistics, wages have not been keeping up with inflation over the last 30 years. And just to give you a good example, if a grocery store clerk or just somebody with an average job, you know, average pay 20, 30 years ago, he could support a family of four, support a family of five. He could still buy a home. He could still send his kids to college. And over the last 20 years, with this hyper debt we've seen, now it takes two incomes to buy a home. It takes two incomes to raise a family. Maybe you rent. Maybe you don't even own now. And it takes a loan to go to college. It takes a loan to buy a car. So we're not seeing real wages keep up with the artificial growth we've seen from inflation. All we're seeing is an increase in debt meet that demand from inflation.
If you know, want to talk about the dollar collapse, where are all the 2010 import cars? Where's all the advertisements? Where's all the new model Toyotas that's supposed to be coming out? Where is it all? There's not a single advertisement about it. The only thing 2010 you're seeing is by Ford or GM.
And why is that?
They're not going to ship it here. It's going to other countries now. China has already surpassed us in being the largest car buyers in the world last year. So where do you think Toyota, Honda are going to try to market their cars to? Here? Over there. Well, toilet paper, about four rolls of these, about 3 years ago, we used to be able to sell it at dollar for four. Right now, with prices as it is, these are selling for a dollar each. That's 3 years, triple the price in 3 years. When you see hyperinflation, people have to stop looking at gold and other things like that. When you want to see hyperinflation at its core, look at the price of paper, beans, rice, soy, staple foods, the main source foods. That's part of our staple diet. Bread, yeast, batteries. Batteries, those are one of the first things to go up on a hyperinflation level. Watch out for batteries. Most of the stuff are imported, and they're all metallic components. Whether it's zinc, silver, palladium, when those things have to be made in other countries and imported over here, you're going to see the real hyperinflation. Because they're going to say, what, we sell those at 50 cents each, but the dollar going down, shipping costs going up, energy price going up, it's not worth it to sell it to the U.S. for $2 each. not even at $2. So when that happens, you're going to see all these. I mean, we are a 70% consumer base. Everything is imported. What happens when the imports stop? And there's no production capacity in America. Hyperinflation. The only way to get goods in from other countries, because we have no production, is we're going to have to pay double, triple what we used to, or they're not going to sell it to us. What's the point? They used to sell it to us on credit, but we're not paying back anymore. On an average person, while they might not know it, but for the people who does the shopping, like the women who shops for their family, I mean, if you offer them a dollar or toilet paper, they'll take the toilet paper, because this is going to have so much more uses. Do you get it, George? This has 1,000,001 uses, while this is limited to a soda. That's the magic of the depreciating dollar. I'm sure this was 100 years ago when the Federal Reserve conceived it. It could have bought probably 100 rolls of toilet paper, right? But now it could only buy one. So the dollar depreciated to 1% of what it was. We're only 1% away from the total collapse of the dollar. 1%. What is people holding on to right now? If it depreciated 99%, we're only left with 1%, right? Everybody's holding on to the thread of 1%. It could happen tomorrow, or a year from now, or 2 years from now. But we're on an agreement. It's going to happen. Might as well be in position. Get 100 of these.
Okay, Moses, we're back. As you can see, once again, just like we have covered in other previous broadcasts about the dollar, and I continuously tell the Moors that they should learn how to grow your own food. Go ahead and stack up on you some dry goods now while the stores are still open and their prices is where they are, because they are going to increase to the point, especially after the dollar collapses, you discover that we will be in a serious problem here in the United States for those people who do not know how to grow your own food, have not made any preparations for taking care of yourself. A lot of us are working hard to get money on jobs so we can put new rims on the car and a brand new paint job, a brand new stereo system, all this. That's baloney. A man and a woman, they got sense enough to prepare themselves for the future. Water, go and get your water, stack up on that, your dry goods, and whatever else you can get your hands on. And I just like the guy was talking about the batteries. That's very, very important for you to have some good batteries that you can depend on if the dollar collapses and the electrical bills skyrocketing and stuff and lights going off, people losing houses and all kind of stuff. So you have to pay attention to the indicators in this country. And now you can see why we have debt collectors pulling all kind of stuff, calling people, because they're trying to get as much money as they can by any means necessary. And even if they have to lie, steal, cheat, and all of this stuff. So if we pay attention to the indicators, and learn how to deal with these people, we can be successful. Now, a lot of the contracts you have, you can get out of them. Those of you who have your student loans, they're robbing you on that. Those who are being forced to pay exorbitant amounts of child support to somebody else instead of being able to take care of your own children out of your own pocket for your own self, you need to learn how to cancel these contracts. Your mortgage, cancel that contract, get out of that thing, and so that you can have some dollars in your pocket that you can work with, okay? There's all kinds of stuff going on. It's not just limited to your bill collector.
Well, what are your rights when you're approached by a police officer? Do you have to hand over your identification? Well, these are questions we looked into today after a man believes his rights were violated in Lancaster County. CBS 21's Jenny Joyce is live tonight with the Lancaster County Mobile Newsroom in East Hemphill Township with more on this story. Jenny.
Well, Tanya, the man tells us he was standing on a bridge overlooking Route 283 taking photographs. Police pulled up, asked the man for ID. He refused, and multiple laws were tested.
You have any ID on you?
I do, but I don't have to show it to you.
That response.
I do, but I don't have to show it to you.
By 25-year-old Jason Macchione of Hershey, agitated an officer from Northwest Regional Police Department.
Okay, this is the game we're going to play.
Macchione, who was standing on the Mount Gretna Road Bridge taking pictures when police pulled up around midnight, recorded his interaction with officers. It's earned more than 18,000 hits on YouTube, but the decision to record was not popular with police.
I know my rights. I'm just
no, you don't know your rights because, listen, your rights are you cannot video our voice if we don't want you to.
The officer claimed the videotape violated state wiretapping laws, but Northwest Regional Police Chief Samuel Gatchell admits his officers were misinformed.
When you're in a public place and the gentleman has a right to be in that location, he has all the right in the world to video and audio record you.
Chief Gatchell weighed in on the entire police incident.
I think mistakes were made on both sides.
Gatchell says if Macchione did not like the way the officers were handling him, he should have called a police supervisor immediately. Gatchell also admits the man was not at fault for failing to hand over his ID.
He was not violating the law by the mere fact he wasn't handing it over.
But the chief defends his officers for requesting proper identification. Gatchell says Macchione violated a parking law for illegally pulling over on the bridge and leaning over the bridge, which concerned at least one passerby enough to call police. Chief Gatchell says it is pretty standard for officers to ask for identification when they're walking into an unknown situation. Gatchell also tells us in this case, if officers decided to pursue a citation for Macchione's apparent illegal parking job and the man still refused to hand over his ID, he could have potentially been arrested. We are live with the Lancaster County Mobile Newsroom in East Hemphill Township. Jenny Joyce, CBS 21 News.
All right, Jenny, thanks. A lot of interesting points there. Well, with
okay, we're back, Moles. We come down to right around the close of the first hour. For those of you who have questions or comments in regards to your debt collectors, the bill collectors, or what have you, go ahead and raise your hand, open up the line, and you can let us know what you got, what's on your mind, okay? We're going to start with area code 219. 219.
Hi.
It's Mom. It's Mom, could you speak up a little bit, sister?
I'm so far in debt, but I just got a car refund. Do you think it's the right thing to do for me to file?
Wait a minute. Are you on some type of speakerphone or something? Because we can hardly hear you.
Okay. Can you hear me now? Is that better?
Yeah, that's a little bit better.
Oh. Okay. Do you think I should file bank assessment? I just got a car repo and I got high utility bills. I didn't make the arrangements, payment arrangement. In Indiana, they only let you go 3 months. So I'm winding up paying like $300.
That's been difficult to making out what you were saying. I can probably figure out what you're saying. You seem to be going in and out. You called.
Oh, I don't. Can you hear me now?
Oh, I hear you perfectly now.
Can you? Okay. Do you think I should file bankruptcy? I had a car repo yesterday, and I got made payment arrangements with my with NIPSCO. That's a utility company in Indiana. And I agreed to pay the, it's like $163 for the back thing and whatever I use. So I wind up paying $300 a month for 3 months with that, and I'm on a fixed income. I don't know what to do. I can't pay all this stuff.
All right. Well,
so I was sitting here thinking about bankruptcy.
Okay. Before you file bankruptcy, why don't you send me an email to hawker53@hotmail.com, and I'll send you a copy of Secrets of America, because that'll tell you the best way to go about filing bankruptcy and getting something in return. So you send that to tarhaka53@hotmail.com, and I'll send you Secrets of America. And then before you file bankruptcy, you read that article, and I'll tell you exactly how to go about doing that.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Please. All right. Anybody else got any questions or comments? Go ahead and raise your hand. And I'll open up the phone line so you can get in and you can tell us all about it, okay?
You know, when you really start to look into what's going on, you're going to come to the conclusion very quickly, if you really search it out honestly in your own mind, number one, there is no money. And that's a hard concept for people to grasp, but you know, in the seminar, we hand out documents and different things that actually prove that there is no money. I have a document from the Department of Treasury that says Federal Reserve notes are not money. They're not dollars. They're pieces of paper that represent purchasing power. Now, you just about have to understand lawyer speak to understand what that just said. And then you get into what the definition of is.
Right. Yeah, we have a president who had one anyway that taught us that one.
Yes, and everybody needs to, if you're going to look at this process of what we do, you have to get the book that defines the terms that we're using, and that's a law dictionary. And we like to use Black Sixth, although it's not the definitive, it pretty well tells the story that we're telling. But back to what we're talking about with debt. Most people, if they remember back in U.S. history, and again, now this is just a theory, okay? I don't know that anybody's going to jump up and wave papers in the air and say, I've got it right here, here's the proof, okay? But we also believe that nothing happens by coincidence. So if you take the theory that nothing happens by coincidence and you start at September 17th, 1789, now, the average 95% of the people in America don't have any idea what day or what happened on September 17th, 1789. But that was the day that the Congress assembled, ratified the Constitution for the United States of America. And it was on that day that the United States became bankrupt. Because within that Constitution, there's a clause that says all debts or engagements that were entered into before this agreement, this Constitution, are as valid against the United States afterwards as well as before. Well, if we go back and search out history, we know that the United States, under an interesting title of Benjamin Franklin's called Minister Plenipotentiary, borrowed a sum of money in gold, which is very important, from the King of France. And we have that treaty. And it was to be paid back at a particular time, and this happened in the 1770s. The agreement was made to repay in, I think it was 1782. And upon the sum, it was never, they didn't even make the interest payments. The country was broke. That was one of the reasons they were reassembling the Congress and rewriting the Articles of Confederation, because there was no fluid medium of exchange. If you lived in Rhode Island and you were trying to sell something in Pennsylvania, your money and your goods wasn't any good in Pennsylvania. And so one of the things that they had to do was get a common currency. And if there wasn't anything else that they had to do, it was that. And so that is the beginning, if you will, of the Continental Congress. and the Constitution of the United States. And if you think about that, in today's terms, that's all about commerce.
Right.
And that's what we deal in, is commerce. And so there was a specific repayment plan put forward that wasn't met, and at the signing of the Constitution, the country was bankrupt. National bankruptcy lasts 70 years. There has to be, in reorganization, a plan or a pledge made of assets, if you will. Well, at the time, there were only 13 colonies. What asset base did they use? We don't know, except that it was probably eventually other colonies. Well, if you move ahead 70 years, you come to 1859, September 17th, right before the presidential election, and you come out of bankruptcy, and now you have to either repay your debt or go back into bankruptcy.
Interesting.
Okay? And so if you can't yet pay your debt, you have to reorganize once again. And if you reorganize once again, you have to make a new pledge. So if they had telephones then, the phone would ring from Abraham Lincoln to Jefferson Davis in the South and say, President Davis, this is President Lincoln, and we need what you have. And President Davis says, ain't our problem, it's your problem. Well, it's your problem now because we're going to come and get you, and we're going to take everything you have, and we're going to call it the Civil War and say it's over slavery. Well, it's a well-known fact the governor of Maine had 65 slaves.
So it wasn't over slavery.
It wasn't slavery. I mean, that's a nice history thing, but that's just another rewrite of history.
But it was a commerce
issue. It was commerce. It's always about money. So Lincoln...
You need to say that one more time. It's always about what?
It's always about money. Okay? Now, in that context, Lincoln then suspended the Constitution of the United States in 1861, and the Civil War was declared. Now, with that suspension comes in what we now know as executive orders. If you trace back executive orders, the first one was written in 1861. The only way they can write an executive order then and now is if the Constitution of the United States is suspended. So, therefore, we come back modern day. If you mention your constitutional rights one more time in my courtroom, I'm going to put you in jail for contempt, because there is no such thing. Okay? So now we need a new pledge. Lincoln, to his credit, figured it out, I believe, before the end of his term. And that's why he was killed. First thing he did was print greenbacks. And he was going to repudiate the debt and issue currency of the United States with no interest. Okay, that was his That was his reorganization plan. Okay, a bullet got in the way of that. Interestingly, 100 years later, another president tried the same thing, and he got killed too. His name was Kennedy. That's how all that ties together. Kennedy printed U.S. notes, and he was going to issue those. Lyndon Johnson's first executive order was to rescind that order that Kennedy had written to issue U.S. notes. Now, if you go then to 1860 and 61, we got to make a new pledge. We pledge all the assets of the South. And in that comes the ratification of the 14th Amendment. In 1871, there's a government called, a corporation called, the Government of the District of Columbia, February 19th, 1871. In 1878, the name of that corporation is changed to the United States. Now the 14th Amendment is here. The government of the United States, a corporation, is in place, and all the districts, you all live in the District of Washington, Western Division. Did you know that?
Yeah, it's amazing. I did know that, but that kind of terminology is totally foreign to us.
Yes, yes. We don't think anything of it, but you have to look at Washington, District of Columbia, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What is Columbia? What is that? Anyway, to get back to our bankruptcy story.
Yeah, that is a good question. What is that?
they pledge all the assets of the South, all the gold, all the agriculture, everything. The South was paid for. They had everything. The North was bankrupt because that was where all the industry was. There was nobody. It was cold. Mm. There's no money. The bankers are squeezing them. So you go into bankruptcy again. You pledge all the assets of the South. And now you jump forward to September 17th, 1929. 45 days before October 29th, 1929. When everybody knows what happens then, the stock market crashes. Roosevelt gets elected in 1932. And the first thing he does for the first approximately 100 days is rewrite everything in this country. He stacks the Supreme Court to back every decision he makes as constitutional, but there's a problem. There's got to be another pledge made because we're still in reorganization. Now, if they've pledged the South, and in 1929 they recaptured all the land because all the farmers went bankrupt, and the banks held all the paper, what is there left to pledge? The only thing left is the people.
Hmm.
Well, how do we do that? Well, if you study the advent of the birth certificate.
Area code 541. Come on in.
Hey, thank you. This is Raven out of Oregon.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Sure. You're loud and clear.
Oh, wonderful. Sam, I just want to just say thank you for making this available for everyone to listen to, because there is just a wonderful, wonderful time for this to be happening, and it couldn't have happened too soon. And I'm grateful that it's happening now. And regarding these debt collectors, when they call, until I have more information memorized within me what to speak to these people, what I have been saying to them is when I pick up the phone and they answer, I tell them, this call may be monitored and or recorded. And they hang up right away. They don't want to speak to me. And the other one I do, I did have patients one day, and a woman came on, and she asked me who I was, and I said, well, I don't know you, but do you realize, so I didn't answer her my name, and I said, but do you realize that you're guilty of extortion and racketeering? And she was so caught off guard, I could tell that she didn't realize that the job she'd been hired for to collect debts was not completely open with her as to the legalities of what she was doing. Needless to say, she was very flustered, and she hung up on me right away, and I have not heard from them since then.
Mm.
And so I wanted to share that in case other people are in the same boat I'm in right now, where I'm still really sinking all of this in, but don't yet have it the ability to put it all together without stuttering or looking at notes.
Okay. Well, that's what we're here for, to expose this thing and to make sure people begin to be able to identify the problem and start working on the solutions. So that's why we hear these. We'll deal with the debt collector, and then later on we'll come back and we'll deal with the student loans, and we'll deal with this mortgage thing and then how they do that. It's all criminal activity, and the more you are exposed to it, the more that you can actually do something about it. So that's why we're actually putting it up here. And, thank you for your call.
Thank you so very much. I'm looking forward to accessing your archives in a couple of weeks and getting busy with all of this, and I just cannot say thank you enough. Blessings to you and peace.
Peace. Okay, Moors, if anybody else got a question or comment, go ahead and raise your hand. I'll open up the lines and you can let us know what you think about it. But we're going to go to part two of what this gentleman was saying, because this is very important for us to get this information understood here.
Hmm. Well, how do we do that? Well, if you study the advent of the birth certificate, you will find that that started its way through the Congress or through the mindset of the people in the 20s. It came to the fruition in 1928. It became actively involved and issued under law in the 30s during the Roosevelt administration. In 1936, Social Security came into being. 1938, it was reorganized. We believe that that's where the Pledge of the People was made on our birth certificates, because another entity was created outside of you and I called a straw man. Now, people can say, well, this is all just a coincidence. Well, I don't believe it's a coincidence. I believe in my heart that it's exactly what took place. Now, interestingly enough, so if you move forward another 70 years, and according to the scripture, a man is in bankruptcy for 7 years, a nation is in bankruptcy for 70 years, and you only get 3 terms, and then all your debts are forgiven in Jubilee. Now, September 17th, 1999, America came out of bankruptcy after 210 years of being in bankruptcy. Interestingly enough, gold coins reappeared on the scene.
That is amazing.
There's a rumor out there that we're going to have a substance-backed banking system alongside the Federal Reserve System. Many people today believe that the Federal Reserve System is a government entity. It's totally a private bank. We like to visit the Federal Reserve website every once in a while, and there you can find out all about the creation of money out of thin air. They put it right out there for you to look at.
Well, during the Y2K scare,
yes,
they just decided to create money.
They created money, and they placed billions of dollars around the country in case there were runs on the bank.
What's amazing to me is the average person you would talk to is like, oh, that's a good idea. They just made more money, and it was just this kind of idea that somehow money comes out. I mean, I almost think most people think that that's how money is, like pennies from heaven, just kind of pours down from heaven.
Well, it pours down from the Federal Reserve. That's heaven. And we have another document, and I can't quote it off the top of my head, but I can come close.
If that's heaven, unfortunately, who's God?
I understand.
Yeah.
and now you're getting to the reality of the situation. But I have another document put out by the House Banking Committee, Banking and Currency Committee in 1964, that literally says money is created out of thin air, and the American people are obligated to pay it back with interest. Now, the House of Representatives said that. If you follow the news, which I don't very much, but in the last 6 weeks, Representative James Traficant from Ohio was recently indicted by the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
I believe solely for political purposes. Representative Traficant had the audacity in 1993 to stand on the floor of the House of Representatives and make the statement, ladies and gentlemen, we all know that the only reason we're here is to oversee the largest bankruptcy in the history of the earth, the Corporation of the United States of America. Now, that's not his exact quote, but that's generally what he said. Now, everybody, when they start to think about this concept, there's a great discomfort that starts up here and goes clear to their toes. And that's where that confusion that you were talking about comes in. That's called cognitive dissonance. And that cognitive dissonance builds to the point where your eyes glaze over, your body shuts down, and you look for the nearest bar because you can't deal with this.
Or Prozac.
Or you name it. The American people have been sold a bill of goods. And what we're trying to do, Mike, very simply, is to show them, don't believe anything we say. Just take what we say and go check it out for yourself.
Hmm.
We'll give you the documents. We'll give you the places to look for you to check it out for yourself. When Roosevelt suspended the gold standard, 1933,
right.
That document was called H.G.R. 192, House Joint Resolution. And in that document, everybody looks at that as, well, this document right here is the bankruptcy, again, if you will. But that's as far as they go. They don't go on back here to the beginning. And we believe that you have to go back to the beginning to understand what all's going on.
To understand the pattern.
Exactly. Now, when he suspended the gold standard and confiscated the gold, that gold is the substance. And without substance, there's no money. There's nothing behind it. It's just paper. Everybody in my father and mother's generation understands that it's just paper, because they lived through that period of time and in some form or fashion. Their parents lived it through it, and they talked about it. What the HGR 192 actually did is, if we lived back then, if I, you and I were doing business in 1928, and I went to you and I said, Mike, listen, you know, I got this little business over here, this little farm, and I need to borrow $10,000. That's like $1 million today or more. And you said, well, I've got it in gold. Great, that's what I need. I need the gold, Mike. And you said to me, here's the gold.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a contract signed. And you're going to repay me in gold, aren't you? And I say, absolutely, Mike. That's exactly what I'm going to pay you in. And then the Congress comes in 1933 under House Joint Resolution 192 and says, that contract that you and I made is void, and I no longer have to repay you in gold. I can pay you in anything I want to pay you in. I can pay you in paper. How would that make you feel?
You're like, I got ripped off.
You did get ripped off.
Yeah.
Okay? But that's exactly what HGR 192 did. It took your ability to force me to pay you in gold and made you take whatever I give you. I can give you a promissory note. Here you go. You're paid in full. Take me to court. I beg you. Because you're going to lose. And that's exactly what's going on today. There is no money. And what we're trying to teach people is that these green pieces of paper that they're carrying around are just evidences of this debt back here issued by the Federal Reserve. And we all know that whoever gathers the most debt pays the most taxes.
Hmm.
So how big is your income?
Hmm. Now, this is what I like, and we got to close this up because,
okay.
I mean, if they want more of you, then they've got to get to one of your seminars. They've got to, because, I mean, you'll keep going on and on and on with this amazing information.
It goes for 2 or 3 days.
Right. And the one thing that does concern me, just as the everyday kind of guy,
mm-hmm.
is that if they're not afraid to take my land, if they're not afraid to use me as a person, I mean, literally, I mean, a birth certificate is a scary thing these days. Social
That's
Security
correct.
Numbers.
That's right.
You know, I mean, it's getting scary out there. I mean,
That's correct.
You know, because they own your children now.
That's right. They
I
do.
Mean, literally. I mean,
literally.
That's why they can come in and even it just, you know, I mean, so many of us parents are afraid of this because, you know, they can go into school, take your kid, just if they heard that you did something to hurt or harm your kid.
That's correct.
They can just make it up if they want to. And it doesn't even have to be your guilty. Till you know, or innocent till proven guilty.
That's another day's subject.
Yeah, because it is actually their possession anyway.
That's correct.
You know, and so if they keep taking more of who we are and what we are, what do we have left to give them? Our spirit? Our what? Our kidney? And I think that what is resonating within people and why people are flocking to your trainings, your teachings, your mm-hmm. seminars. Is because there comes a time where people have to say, you know, enough's enough. You can't just keep taking everything from me. How do I get back my freedom, my rights? How do I win in this thing? And you're teaching them how to do it, because this comes right down to that.
Yeah, and we are doing that. We're attempting to do that every day. And I just want to build on that one thing right real quickly and think in commercial terms, if you will, to this statement. If that birth certificate was pledged, there's always two sides of a ledger in accounting. At death, you're exempt from levy on your estate for $650,000. Where did that $650,000 come from? because there has to be an offsetting entry.
Hmm.
If this is at death, there has to be an offsetting entry at birth. Now, if that was pledged, a pledge is a collateralization, is it not?
Okay, Morris, we're back. That was some very, very interesting information, and we should remember what we heard here. I would encourage you to re-listen to this broadcast over and over so you can clearly understand what you just heard. Now, to get a total clarity on what's going on in America, what transpired in the past, send me a blank email. Just say to Harker, send me those free articles you mentioned on the broadcast, because that will give you the ins and outs of the whole thing. The 14th Amendment exposed, the commerce game and how to play, secrets of America, the U.S. bankruptcy and the Moors. And just send me a free email to tahaka53@hotmail.com, and I will send those articles to you so that you can read them and so you will know what's going on and what you are up against, so you will know exactly what to do. Okay? Now, if anybody got any questions, go ahead and raise your hand. And keep in mind that every Wednesday evening, we have the Moorish American Government now is officially on Blog Talk Radio, and they have their new show. And so let me give you the call-in number to their broadcast as well. You can catch me over there. We'll be teaching contract law every Wednesday night. And the dial-in number is 347-327-9263. That's 347-327-9263. Their broadcast occurs at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on Blog Talk Radio, same time as mine. But on Wednesday, I'll be with the Moorish American Government, and we'll be teaching contract law. So make sure that you are there and tune in for this very informative information. Make sure you have paper and pen handy as we teach the different components of contract law so that y'all can get that down to a science and you can learn that stuff. Now, when it comes to verbal contracts, because we have a lot of this kind of stuff going on as well, there are people that are making verbal contracts with you, and they are trying to avoid any written contracts which would give you some type of defense. And when somebody calls you on the telephone, they're trying to get you to agree to be, number one, a fiction, agree to the debt. And as the young lady said, what the first thing she tells him is that, hold on a minute, this telephone call is being recorded. And, of course, that gives you what? Evidence. So they don't want that, because what they're trying to do is get you to enter into a verbal contract with them. And, of course, we know better than that. But you want to let them know that, hey, this thing is being recorded. And also, could you give us your name and your mailing address? That way, if you claim I owe you a debt, I'll send you an affidavit. You can provide proof of claim that I owe you something, okay? You can prove, in other words, prove that debt, okay? Put it on paper. Send it to me so I can see what you got, and make sure that your proof carries my wet ink signature, which means that I agreed to a contract with you, and I owe you a debt. Now, if you're not willing to do that, then I'm afraid that we cannot contract. And you have to keep in mind that the United States operates on a continuous series of contracts. That's the way the country runs. It runs on contract law, and the game is called the commerce game. And so the whole thing operates that way. Your student loan, your child support, your mortgage, everything operates under the terms and conditions of contract law. So for those of you who have my archives, you know by now that we got a lot of brothers and sisters across the country who do have that, and they are doing a tremendous amount of work and learning a great deal of information. They're actually using it. I want to send out say thanks to the brothers that came here this evening from Atlanta, and we sat down and had a two-hour interview, and I know you guys are on your way back home now, but I certainly appreciate you coming by, and I hope you all got something out of the interview. I just want to say thank you for coming to visit me, okay? Now, let's deal with, we're going to talk about what to do when you're sued, because we got some debt collectors that want to file in the courts and all this kind of stuff. So how do you handle that situation? Now, we got right there to August Archives to show you exactly what to say when you go in that courtroom, but we're going to deal with that now, and let's see what we got going here.
With the economy in flux, more people are finding it hard to make ends meet. Some have to choose which bills to pay and which ones will have to wait. When that happens, it's usually not long before debt collectors start calling. So what do you do when one calls you? What should you say? And more importantly, what should you not say? Jerry Detweiler, a personal finance expert with Credit.com and author of the book Reduce Debt, Reduce Stress, Real Life Solutions for Solving Your Credit Crisis, joins us now with some tips on how to handle calls from debt collectors. Hi there, Jerry. Thanks for joining us.
Hi there.
So, Jerry, what is the very first thing you should do if a debt collector calls?
When a debt collector calls, tell them one thing. Put it in writing. This is your right under the Federal Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. They have to send you a written notice within 5 business days, and you want that notice so you can investigate your options for dealing with that debt.
So once the notice comes in the mail, what will the notice say? What will it spurn you to do?
Right. The notice is going to tell you who they are, what kind of debt they're collecting, how much it's for, et cetera. Now, once you get that written notice, you have a second right, and that second right is to ask them to verify the debt. So essentially, you're saying, prove to me you owe the debt. And they have 30 days to do that. While they verify the debt, they have to stop collection activity, and that gives you more time to research. What are your options? Do I owe this debt? Is the amount correct? If I owe it, how am I going to pay it? If I don't owe it, what am I going to do to try to resolve it?
So while you're asking them for this verification, they cannot call you again. Is that right?
That's correct. Collection activity must stop until they verify the debt in writing.
Okay, now, is there anything that you do not want to do or say when a debt collector calls?
The biggest mistake when talking to a debt collector is saying it too much and giving them too much information. So, for example, don't say, oh, I'll give you $5, just stop calling me, because that's admitting the debt, or especially if you're not sure whether you owe it, or you don't want to give them your bank account number, even if you do owe the debt. I wouldn't give a collector, a stranger, calling me by bank account number or debit card number over the phone. So try to keep it as short as possible. Again, ask for the verification in writing, and then keep your conversations brief.
Is there any use to negotiating with a debt collector? And they're not really empowered to help you in any way, is that right?
Oh, you are absolutely right that you can negotiate with a debt collector. In fact, what we're seeing is better settlements than ever in the past, because many of these debt collectors are literally buying these debts for pennies on the dollar. So even if you can't afford the full amount, or maybe there was some dispute over the debt, you may be able to resolve it for an amount that you can afford, which could be substantially less than the original amount.
That's very good to know. I think that's something that a lot of people are not aware of. Now, collection accounts do end up on your credit report, how does that affect your score?
A collection account on your credit report can drop your credit score like a rock. It's a very negative item, and unfortunately, paying it or not paying it doesn't really matter. It doesn't improve your credit score to pay off a collection account. If you think you don't owe a debt, then I would definitely negotiate with the collection agency to make sure it's removed. Let's say you had a legitimate dispute. You were billed for a medical procedure, you never saw the bill, and then it's suddenly in collections. I would fight hard to get the collection agency to agree to remove it from my credit in exchange for payment. Now, I would recommend if you're contacted by a debt collector that you check your free credit reports at annualcreditreport.com. That's the website to get your 3 credit reports. You can also see how the collection account has impacted your score at credit.com. We have our free credit report card, and there are other sites that do similar things. And then keep track of that information, because if a debt collector has has illegally harmed your credit, you may have additional leverage for fighting back.
Now, can the debt collector cross the line over the phone? There are some things that they are not allowed to say. And if they do say these things, do you have any recourse?
Yeah, we're hearing lots of reports of debt collectors that do cross the line. I had a friend who was 8 months pregnant, was told she'd spend the weekend in jail if she didn't pay a credit card debt that was overdue, and that's illegal. We don't have debtor's prison in America. So debt collectors can't threaten to take any action that they can't or won't take, and usually that means if they're going to do something to you, like go after your wages or try to go after property you own, they typically have to take you to court first and get a court judgment. So be very suspicious if a debt collector is saying things like, we're going to call the sheriff, you're going to be in jail, we're going to call your boss and take money out of your paycheck next Friday. Chances are they cannot do that.
If they say these things, though, can you report them to the police?
You can absolutely report them to the regulatory agencies like the Federal Trade Commission, as well as your state attorney generals. A lot of AGs have been taking action against collectors. You can also hire your own attorney, because the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act is very clear. If a debt collector breaks the law, you may be entitled to damages as well as your attorney fees.
Right. Now, can a debt collector tell other people, like your employer or your neighbors, about your debt? Is that allowed?
Unless someone is a co-signer on your debt, the debt collector cannot tell them about your debt. Now, they can call other people to try to locate you, but they can't discuss with those the debt with those people. And once they found you, calls to anybody else must cease. So again, if a debt collector is discussing your debt with someone else, they've probably broken the law.
All right, and explain what zombie debts are and why they are such a problem.
Zombie debts are happening all the time. They're these old debts that seem to come out of the grave, and they won't leave you alone. They could be 10 or 15-year-old debts. What's happening is there are these companies called debt buyers that buy very old debts, boxes and boxes of them, for pennies on the dollar, and then try to collect. And often these debts are outside the statute of limitations. That means that even if the collector took you to court to try to sue you, even if you owed the debt, you would lose because the debt is too old. And in most states, the statute of limitations is anywhere from 4 to 6 years for most types of debt. So the good news is that these very old debts should not appear on your credit reports if they're more than 7.5 years old. And if you tell the collector, this debt is too old, leave me alone, they have to stop. And the only way they could then contact you would be to take you to court, and presumably they would lose.
Right. All right, Jerry, thank you so much for all your help today.
Thank you.
All right, Mose, we back. Now, that's very, very good information that we want to know our rights and what we can do and what they can and can't do. And that is very, very helpful information. Once again, I encourage you to go back and re-listen to this broadcast. You can also go to Morse Talk Live 100, right there on the internet, where the broadcast is being broadcasted live here. And if you look up under the changing picture, you'll see where you can actually download that broadcast. Okay? You can click on the embed widget. You can copy the widget, embed it on your website. And as the shows come out, they can be heard right there on your own website. We'll be broadcasting right there. You can just click on them and listen to previous shows. You can click on it and listen to a live show. Dial into the live show right there. You can download it if you want to. Upload it to your computer. You can download it on a disc. That way you have this information and you can go back and listen to it again. Okay? Very, very helpful information.
These days I get a lot of hate mail, a lot of people that are upset when I call their industry out. And 99% of it I pitch, but I thought I would take this particular piece of mail and kind of share it with you so you would know what was going on. I was on Fox and Friends the other day, and was taking a call about how to deal with a credit card collector, and I did my normal thing that I've done for a decade and said, you know, you got to be careful with credit card collectors. They're scum. You can tell they're lying if their mouth is moving, and never give them electronic access to your checking account under any circumstances. They'll steal from you. They'll clean out your account and do everything in writing because you can't trust anything they say and so on. That's stuff I've said for a decade. And but I got a letter then, of course, as a reaction to that from the president of a debt collection agency. His name is Mike Vericchio, I guess. Sorry, Mike, if I messed up your name. He's the president of Global Acceptance Credit in Arlington, Texas. Now, I'm not going to read the whole letter. I edited it because it's very lengthy and detailed and so forth, but just kind of give you a sense of this, and it'll give me a chance to teach some of you some of the distinctions and things that are out there and where I'm coming from on this. We are debt collectors. Your comment that most credit card collectors are scum compelled me to email you. I want to share with you why we believe that we are actually the good guys and why the people who work in our industry deserve respect and not degrading comments like you made in the national media. The efforts of the collection industry make a significant and positive impact on the U.S. economy. Bull. The dollars that are collected on defaulted debt are circulated right back into the economy. Our ability to perform our function efficiently and effectively keeps prices for goods and services lower. Bull. Interest rates lower. Bull. And allows the continued flow of credit. Bull. In addition to protecting and enhancing the financial interests of the 92% to 97% of the consumers that pay their credit card debts or carry no credit card debt, which I assume includes you. It does include me, but that's bull. You're not protecting my financial interests. Our industry keeps hundreds of thousands of consumers who work in credit and collections employed. True. We are not so naive to believe that the millions of collector or consumer communications made, that some may be handled inappropriately, all of them, or may even be illegal, the majority of them. Nor do we believe that, as in all industries, there are no bad apples in ours. However, your comment that most credit card collectors are scum and that debt collectors will drain your bank account if they have your checking account number exhibits your naivete of our industry, our mission, our people, and the facts. In summary, I want you to know your comments were inappropriate and do not reflect the truth regarding the vast majority of collections professionals. Well, Mike, let me first off tell you that there is no naivete in what I'm dealing with. I have dealt with people of your ilk and your employees' ilk for 20 years, tens of thousands of cases. I didn't make this up. It wasn't a vague opinion that I pulled out of the air for purposes of melodrama. Credit card collectors are scum, and you can tell they're lying if they're mouth moving. Is there a possible chance that 1% of them aren't? Yeah, but it's so narrow that it's not worth even talking about. So now, do I support your idea that somehow your industry is some highbrow, wonderful industry? Well, you may have that illusion about your industry, but I don't have any illusions about your industry. I deal with the scum you employ, and our counselors deal with them all over the nation. And so I'm under no illusion of the way they treat people. When you Discover Card or one of their representatives or debt buyers like your company is, the buyers of distressed debt, buying the stuff at pennies on the dollar, calls the single mom up. She doesn't answer the phone. Her kid answers the phone. And they say things like, well, get your mommy. Well, she's in the bathroom. Well, get her, because if you don't, I'm going to come get your toys because she hasn't paid her Discover bill. The kid runs crying to his mother and has all kinds of problems. This is the kind of crap we deal with. American Express asked my wife why she would stay with a man that wouldn't pay his bills. This is the kind of crap we deal with. We've had them clean customers' accounts out. We have them lie. We have them call 62 times in one day. We have them call at 4 o'clock in the morning. We have them call at 1 o'clock in the morning. We have them call repeatedly 7 times during dinner. We have them promise that they can garnish someone's wages when they've not yet executed a lawsuit. All of which are, by the way, illegal under the Federal Fair Debt Collections Practices Act. So they're breaking federal law when they do that. There's no agency out there that is armed or staffed or funded well enough to shut you people down when you misbehave. Otherwise, the majority of you would be shut down. Now, am I against a debt being collected? Absolutely not. Am I against you, Mike, buying the debt at pennies on the dollar from Citibank and attempting to make a profit by collecting it? Absolutely not. The thing I object to is that you and your organization and people like you break federal law on a daily basis. That's what I object to. The way you misbehave and the way you treat the people you deal with. Is it okay to lean on somebody and put pressure on someone to collect? You bet. Calling people names, screaming at them, calling their neighbors, calling their children, calling their employer 16 times in one day. These are illegal activities, not to mention really scummy. Which is where I got my definition. Credit card collectors are scum. Now,
okay, we're back, Moles. Woo! That was That was a good one. Anyway, all we have to do is remember that somebody's calling you on the telephone about a debt. They say you owe them. Okay, you call me, you say I owe you for this debt. Just go ahead and put it in writing and send me that bill. Make sure that my signature is on it, clearly showing that I agreed to contract with you and the legitimacy of the debt you claim I owe you. Okay, that is the procedure that we want to follow. And we also want to, don't forget to send that letter so that you can get them to refrain from contacting you by telephone. Because what we deal with is we deal with evidence. And if we don't have any evidence, we have no case. So we're going to need something on paper so that we can look at it and work with you with that. Okay? Telling them that you're recording them, that's a good idea. Because that's exactly what they do when they contact you. The first thing, are you so-and-so? Well, who are you? Are you so-and-so? Well, who are you? Well, we're with such and such a company. Okay, what is this about? Well, are you so-and-so? Well, no, we can't, you know, because I don't know what, how many capital letters you got over there? I'm not going to agree to be anything that I'm not. Send it to me in writing, refrain from calling me about a debt that you bought from somebody else, and I don't know you. I haven't contracted with you. If I did have a contract, it was with the original person you bought the debt from, so how could I possibly owe you something because you bought something from somebody else? Help me out with that. Anyway, it's very, very simple in dealing with these people. If you have contracts that you're tied to, you need to cancel these contracts and get out of these contracts that you're in. Okay, you wanna cancel those contracts.
Greetings. I'd like to invite you out to the Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th, 2013, located in Jacksonville, Florida. 3 days of executing and planning of executive plans for 25-year agenda, operating as an economic unit. The presenters will be Shem L. of the Tamarite 2 Project, Dr. Ali Muhammad and Minister Inky of the Black Genetic Tour, Sundiata Amma L., Professor Isef Deanham L., Tahaka Amana L., Abundance Child, Fatima, the Alchemist Shabazz, Messiah L., and more. Topics will be the execution of urban geoponics, creating independent distribution systems, creating independent economic systems, genetics, private security force, the wholesale and manufacturing of natural products, Moorestown, creating one in every state, Moore's Eastside Farms, putting one in every state. You do not want to miss this summit. It is very enlightening, empowering, and most of all, it's applicable. Everything that we talk about, we do. Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th. Log on to www.summitofthemoors.com. You can register for free. The summit is always free. You can also get your hotel room, which will be on the river at the Wyndham Hotel. That's www.summitofthemoors.com. The summits are always free. See you at the summit.
One more time, Mo. Don't forget, for those of you who are trying to do your estate, now, inside the archives, you have your estate manual, you have your estate letter, and you have all the other supporting documents. And for those of you who want to get out there and place that thing in the hands of your employee to stop it from taking taxes out your check, go right to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Once you get there, look around. If you click on the letters under the picture, a little drop-down menu come back and give you a little additional information on that. But before you do anything, call me, Tarka Amana L. Bay, at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Like,
also, for those of you who want to set up your will, all that information is in there as well, right there in the Talkers Master Library. Don't forget, www.newfreehelpgroup.com, okay? All right.
Area code 706. Hi, Tahaka. This is Queen Lene Bay. How are you today?
I'm just fine, sister. What's on your mind?
I had two questions. The first one is, after canceling the contract, buying your package and all that, if I wanted to go out and purchase a car, how should I go about doing that so that I won't have to pay them for the car, because I know banks really don't have money to give us or to borrow for us to borrow?
Okay, well, that's going to be a tough one because they're going to do everything they can to make sure they get some dollars out of you. But now, if you want to get the car, you can go ahead and get the car through traditional means, but pay close attention to the contract, because it'll tell you at the bottom of the contract, if you look at the bottom of the contract, especially if they tell you something about an application, of course, they'll tell you that, tell them you're going to need to queue something number on that too. But it will tell you down there, it will usually say you cannot discharge this until 6 months. So you want to make at least several payments on the automobile before attempting to discharge that. We had a sister that was successful. She discharged her car note, and she was very, very successful in doing that. But you want to pay very, very close attention to that. Go ahead and get it. Read the bottom part and see exactly how long it'll save before you can actually discharge that note on that automobile. Now,
okay.
What's your second question?
My second question is, when setting up a trust, I was reading that we were supposed to call the IRS and get an EIN number. Are we supposed to pay for that, or is that supposed to be free?
Well, no, you don't pay for that. You want to go ahead and get your trust documents already set up, but more importantly, you want to get the Internal Revenue Service to give you that EIN number minus a Social Security number. You don't want to give them any Social Security information. So what I recommend, you have an archive, go to THC Trust, and they will show you how to get around that and request the EIN number from the Internal Revenue Service and get that, and take it to the bank and set up your non-interest-bearing checking account so you can begin to discharge your debts on the private side. You're going to have to do your indentures. Of course, all of that is explained to you in the ABC Trust right there into Auckland's archives.
Okay, thank you. And one more question. I'm sorry, I know I was failing at two. But if I wanted to purchase your package for discharging student loans and, like, credit cards, I've seen you had one package specifically for student loans, and then you had one for other debts. Would I have to purchase both of those if I had a credit card and a student loan?
Well, first of all, you can't purchase anything. It clearly shows you that you're donating to the archive. If you're donating to the one that says get rid of all contracts, that's the one that most people would use in dealing with credit card debts and stuff of that nature. But if you have a student loan or child support, then you want to donate to the other package.
Okay. Thank you, Parker.
You're welcome, sir. All right. Area code 404.
Yeah, this is Cheetah Man Rottswell out of Atlanta, Cherokee County.
All right. Give me that intelligent question.
Okay, she had mentioned something about how to purchase a car. You were saying something about the contract. After 6 months, you can discharge the car note. But If you ain't got the money, the CI note to get it, how can you get the car? Because I was talking to a great seal. He was saying something about, you can get a car with your signature. Just go in and by doing the signature thing or something like that. You know something
okay.
like that?
No, what I need you to do for me is go to the car dealership and ask them where you signed for the new car, and then come back and tell me what happened.
You say go there and say what now?
Go to the car dealership, tell them you want a car, and tell them you're gonna pay for it with your signature, and then come back and tell me what happened.
I mean, I don't know if they're gonna say yay or nay. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you come back and tell me what they say. You go out there and don't you let them put you in jail either. You get out of there before they put you in jail.
Oh, they gonna put you in jail for that?
No, they gonna put you in jail. But I'm just saying, I want you to go here. You get over here, you ask me about going somewhere buying a car with your signature. I want you to go there and try to come back and tell me what happened.
Well, where can I go on the archive? I know it's more than one way to skin a cat or to take the cheese out the rat trap. You know what I'm saying? So I was just trying to see. What's the best approach to do that?
Well,
like
information on discharging debt is in the archives. And as soon as you get the archives, you contact me and I'll tell you exactly where to go at in there and where you can access that.
Okay. Thanks.
All right, brother. I thank you for calling. If we have any more questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand and I'll open up the line so you can tell us all about it. Hold on. 310. Come on in.
Hey, Hotep, brother.
Hey, hello. What's going on, man?
I was wanting to ask like a little question about going by like the media right now. Like I'm in California and I wanted to, you know, trying to get some advice on about like probably trying to start a newspaper for the for like the Moorish Nation right now, and I was trying to figure out if you got any quick clues or quick ways to go about starting the newspaper out here in Cali. So we can get to our brother.
If you're gonna start a newspaper, you're gonna need some people, some articles. You're gonna need some news, and you certainly gonna need to advertise my show in there, and all of that good stuff.
Yeah, I was thinking about programming a website. Or like all the declared Moors can put articles down through the website and go through the transmutes of the website onto the post and print around like probably like 7 o'clock Western or Pacific time and print the paper out that way. But I was trying to collaborate with some more of the declared Moors out here, trying to just so we can network and get this thing going to where we can start telling our people about and declaring their nationality instead of, a lot of people out here not even knowing about the Moorish movement or the Moorish America or our true nationality, because it's kind of hard for me as myself to just walk up on somebody and just tell them, or I know I'm pretty sure for a lot of us, and then we got the other side to where, you got us, our own kind, dictating a different kind of movement, but where we got, stuff in black and white where we can actually show the people, ways about going about, nationally, putting out a paper. But I was just seeing if you had any ideas on that, on working on the press. Because right now we need that. The media not going to give us no nothing. It's going to be back and forth, brothers and brothers fighting over what's right and what's wrong, trying to come to a conclusion collectively as a people. It's kind of tough right now.
Okay. Well, I tell you what. If you can email me that website when you get it up, I'll put all kind of articles out there. And you can
Okay. Well, just give me what's the website? Let me email.
The email is tahaka53@hotmail.com. TARHAKA53@hotmail.
53@hotmail?
Yeah, hotmail.com.
Okay, cool. I'll send you one. My name's Aurelius Thomas. Well, Aurelius Thomas L. You'll be able to get with at hotmail.com?
Yeah, tahaka53@hotmail.com. What's the name of your newspaper? Have you come up with a name?
That's the whole thing. I want to. Right now, I'm in the process of doing that. I got a couple of my cousins working on some white, pinning some codes down and I was thinking about just going to Moorish Tribune, or the Moorish Nation Tribune, because we all got good ideas, but we got I'm thinking if we collectively come with a thought, we're like the prophet said, our press, would be our strongest point. I understand that everybody getting their legal rights together, that's all powerful, that's all in the movement, but I'm thinking from my perspective, from what I'm seeing, I'm in LA. I mean, I'm from East Oakland, I was. I can't say I was a direct product of the Panther movement, but my mom was involved. And, I remember going to school and still seeing bulletins and all kind of posters still put up on the wall just to unite people through the media. And I'm not seeing that right now with the Moors because, it's like we got to do something with the media to where we can put ourselves out there and be known as a nation that really exists instead of everybody just, fighting amongst themselves and, you got people on the East Coast going at it, and the people on the West Coast going at it, and it's kind of frustrating to know the truth and know the knowledge, and then you see our brothers and sisters out here that's clueless, still sleep, completely sleep, and then you see our children, and then you got the Trayvon, you got the other kid. I mean, it's so much, and then not excluding that, then there's the police that's killing us. I mean, they not even reported the police that shot the little boy in his back 5 times. Like 3 weeks ago for running, and then they stumped some girl out, some lady police stumped some blood sister out, threw her in the back seat, and she died in the back seat. And then the other brother last week got shot 31 times for having a sock. He pulled out a sock and got shot 31 times by the police. And people, you know, we not really focusing our energy towards exposing certain things, you know, like everybody talking about Chicago, Chicago is murdering up a lot of stuff, but we got to talk about how these pigs or these AKA, you know, slave patrollers are still dogging us out and how we not getting information to our people. So that's like my main concern right now on that, because it's okay. Getting hectic, and then we go into the new retrograde, and I see what they're doing, because they want this energy going to the retrograde so they can redo this 1960 all over. I told my mom, like a month ago, I said, Mom, it's going to be 1960 all over. And she didn't believe me. She was, you know, she hear me, you know, because my mom, and she, you know, she taking in the information I'm telling her, and now here we are a month later, and it's all you see on the TV. You know what I'm saying? It's all about racism. So they pushing this energy into the new retrograde, and we gotta pull together as a people. You know what I'm saying? Somehow, besides just the Nation of Islam, I understand. I love them brothers to death, but you know, we gotta really tell our people the truth about what's really going on out here and how to go about declaring, you know, and stuff like that. Because there's so many roadblocks out there. Because for me, myself, it took me a while. You know, I'm calling temples and meeting people. I had to hook up with some brothers on the East Coast and, you know, pull that way. And you know, it's too tough. It's already tough enough as us as a people. You know, we don't really go for the bull. And then we find stuff being too many turns and too many corners to go around, do this, do that. You know, some people are back away. You know, maybe we can make it easier for our people to declare or actually, you know, just know about declaring for one. Because people forgot that we have not declared our true nationality since slavery, since 1790, since 1786, and all these dates where they put us back into a category of being Negro and Black, you know what I'm saying? And our people just totally forgot. And right now they're wondering, and like how they call Trayvon a non-person, and that blew my mind when I heard them say that, when they addressed him as such. So, you know, it's like I've been reaching out trying to get to other Moors, and, you know, I've been talking to some of the Moors in Canada and some of the Moors in Florida, but, you know, I'm just trying to push it out and just find out any handful of ideas on how to really get this press started, you know, through funding or through help or all of that, you know what I'm saying? Because we got to find a way to come out of this. I mean, like Noble Drew Ali said, our press is our mightiest weapon, you know, so we got to pull the press out. I mean, keep the knowledge of the law, that's what's going to really give us what's going to put the icing on the cake or put us over the top. Because right now, the energy is out there. Our people are right now in senators' houses, and, you know, they go into these houses and trying to talk to these senators. They're not going to come talk to them like that. You know, you got 10,000 Black people at your door, they're not going to talk. But if you got 10,000 Moors at your door, it's going to be a different story. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, a lot about that kind of stuff. But in the protesting part, you know, we're not supposed to be protesting, so we got to put the media up. You know, so I was just trying to get any ideas on that. But you said I'm going to email you my email account. I'm going to email you some more information on all that. But
okay.
I was trying to see if you had any insight on, you know, with the media, with the newspaper, or even starting a channel, you know, about going about it through the networking, you know, because they're obligated to allow us to practice that, you know what I'm saying? So how do we go about doing that, really? You know, so I was just trying to hit on some bold topics and see about moving forward, because right now we kind of like in a state to where we have to move forward, because, you know, our people are getting slaughtered. You know what I'm saying? Like the numbers I picked up, in the street or in the nation. You know, this immigration reform, which I believe is going to bring us back our citizens and bring back Adam Maxim and all that. But at the same time, are we even being aware of what's going on? Because the status quo of the population is to where we're not even accountable. Because if you got 85 million European white people, or, you know what I'm saying, white persons, and then you're going to bring in the Hispanics, and that's going to bring in another 35 million. And they already got, 62 million people in America. Then they're going to bring in another 30-something million. And we're only 32 million deep. We're going to be getting outnumbered 3-4-1 everywhere we look, you know what I'm saying, by next year. You know what I'm saying? So we got to really find a way how we're going to make our voice mean something, you know what I'm saying, because it's just getting to where we're going to be getting voted out, You know what I'm saying? We won't have no kind of nothing for us. Because when the citizens pick up numbers to that, where it's 90-something million Hispanics, and then 85 million white Europeans, and then 32 million African Americans, are they going to be going crazy in the government? You know what I'm saying? The White House is already fighting amongst themselves with the Republicans. And then we got people like Jesse Jackson last night get on there. Totally blew my mind. He is representing, he represented the Tea Party, the founder of the Tea Party. And then he comes back and told our people to be Democrats and all this. And he's a part of the Confederate group, the Confederate tax, you know what I'm saying, Tea Party. You know what I'm saying? That's how twisted it's getting with us. When our own leaders are playing both sides and not really coming out with the information, you know what I'm saying? And that kind of upset me, seeing him on there, you know, debating with a brother about the gun laws and how it was okay about this Zimmerman guy walking around with a pistol because he had obligated legal rights to have a gun. But like I said, you know, we got to start, you know, coming together as a people, informing our people, you know what I'm saying? Because like I said, people do not even know, don't even have a clue. You know what I'm saying? It's ridiculous because, you know, I mean, we could do our own thing in our own nature, but what about the other ones, you know? You know what I'm saying? What about the kid that's right here, you know, the little boy playing in the streets, you know, or the kids in school right now still being lied to, not being told who really founded this country and who really was the first president, not George Washington, John Hanson. You know, stuff like that. It's ridiculous. And when is that going to come to an end? That's my main concern to that. So I'm just going to try and push on the airwaves to all the Moors that's listening. You know, we could do this at a way that we could really do this, you know what I'm saying, through the temples, through the media. And remember Noble Drew Ali, Prophet Noble Drew Ali, our press. So, I mean, the blog talk is this is going to be like phase two of what's going on. We got to get to like a different phase to where we really pushing our information to our people, because if not, we're going to get slaughtered out. We already getting bleached out. Now we're getting bleached out in numbers, you know. So it's kind of frustrating for me, you know, to research. You know, I go to temples out here in L.A., it's not really people in them. I'm like, you know, you find one person, two people maybe, nobody, you know. And then, like I said, we got to get that media going. But my email is stathomas.jt@gmail.com. Anybody want to hit me with an email on any kind of ideas or any kind of little references to make this thing really push, I appreciate it. You know, but now's the time.
And,
Retrograde is here.
And again, I got stathomas.
Mm-hmm. Dot JT. @gmail.com.
Okay, I got it.
Just send me some emails on like people who to hook up with so we can really collab on this and really make it happen, because, you know, the time is now. The retrograde, we got about another, what, 10 days, 12 days, another almost 2 weeks for the retrograde to end. So we gotta push our energy to this retrograde too, because they already see what they're doing. You know what I'm saying? They want everybody focused on racism and hatred so we can carry on to the new retrograde with this energy. Through what's going on, through the polarity of our outlook, you know what I'm saying, of life, you know what I'm saying, and that's going to sway people, and then people don't even know, you know, about the moons and the retrogrades and how the energy is being transferred through us, through the universe, through other people, you know, even through the animals, you know what I'm saying. You look at animals, like I work around animals like forever, and you can see animals starting to be a little funny, and that's how bad the energy is going through right now with us. You know what I'm saying? As a people collectively in the whole world, you know, I mean, the whole world's protesting. We're not the only ones. We get into the game late. You know what I'm saying? They was over there in Turkestan, all over there in Syria, protesting for like the last 3 months, terrorizing. And I caught a glimpse. I got a quick glimpse on the media. They was like, they let the audio play. You know, the media, you know, mainstream CNN, they lie like crazy. But anyway, they let the audio play because they were speaking their language. But then one of the guys hopped in the computer and was like, why aren't they doing this in America? Because there is no liberty right now, you know what I'm saying? The queen lost her liberty last month, or 2 months ago in Canada. She came here, I think, May, and gave it up. So, like I said, it's just only people that got liberty right now is the feds. Everything else is the judicial system. It's like it's up for grabs, you know what I'm saying? But we got to, you know, got to find out how we can get that government back that's supposed to be in effect, you know what I'm saying? So, like I said, I'm just trying to, you know, collab with other Moors. Hit me on the email. I'm in Inglewood, California. I'm going to probably go to Northern California probably like in a couple weeks. We'll see if I can pull some heads up there. And I'm just going to make a move, man. I'm just going to make it happen because we got to. I'm 31 years old. I got a son on the way. I'm going to do my best, to try to turn some heads and do what I could do to the best of my capability. And that was like a brainstorm that I had, paper, And then hearing, knowing about Noble Dry Lee Press that he committed that we should get, that'd be our strongest point of outlook towards the nation, I said, boo, there I go right there. Boom, there I go right there. I got a couple cousins that can hook up some websites. No problem. Now, my whole thing now is going by, probably the finance of getting, a press, like the whole machine and then complexing it to where the computer could, download the emails and then at a certain time start receiving emails, push the print out, and we could have it like that all across the country. But it could be through the Moors, through the temple, not just Moors out here, just, random Moors. Moors is being active. Moors, they got artifacts like yourself, like a lot of the blog talkers, like my man Asir, yourself, other people that's out there blog talking. They got a lot of output, a lot of info, a lot of input. We can really make it happen, brother. I don't want to waste too much time on your
line.
I
think it's a wonderful idea. You you might want to get a copy of the Nation of Islam's paper and look at how they got it laid out, and get some points from that as well.
Yeah, the final call. I'm gonna start hooking up with some of the Muslim brothers, but like I said, they like I don't get it. I don't get the debate with us and them too, cause like. I asked a couple of Muslim brothers. I said, "Hey man, so what's up? Why you won't just go ahead and declare your Moorish nationality?" And they go about, they fly the American flag and they're up for white supremacy. I'm like, white supremacy? And I'm hearing so many brothers come up with that idea. I'm like, where do you think being a Moor is being white supremacy? And then so I said, okay, so you guys won't become Moorish because of the flag. But then you still say you call yourself African American, black, or colored. When that obviously from 1790 and 1774, 1776, from the Naturalization Act, that all slaves were undeclared Moors that got put into that act. And it's crazy because I say, all right, so you call yourself African American, but that's what the slaves went into. That's what they categorized the slaves to go into after slavery, and that's in 1790. Or you want to call it the Sundry Free Moors Act. But like I said, people look at that free, but they look at the part about the whites being included. See, they took a branch of that and gave them a status quo off the branch. But see, they can't nowhere near declare more because they won't be. They can't be. But like I said, it was a scheme within that. But see, a lot of our brothers, they don't really go into the studies and to the knowledge of really what down in the whole Dred Scott Act. So that's another point that we're the Muslims are still having debates with. And I don't go too far. I don't go no more further with them. Cause like I said, I stop right there. So okay, we both made a point. So when we actually see that, that is just a state of mind thinking. You got to remember that the first citizen really did this was 1774. That was a free white person. And you got to remember, person once again goes under a defined categorization of being property, commercial property.
Right.
So we got to start really learning how these frames of context of words are being played against us, and we're getting put into systems that we don't really know clearly about by identification of those systems. So it gets kind of weird. It's crazy because you hear these words every day and don't recognize them. Like the other day, they put it out there. I'm watching TV. And they said, Florida just went under. No, it said we prosecuted the prosecution went about color. No, the defense went about the way of the whole court system went about under a color of law in Florida. So pretty much they went on just told everybody that they broke the law to continue with the law that they were trying to do. in that court case. You know what I'm saying? And then when they nationalize him as a non-person, that means, you know, a non-person has no nationality, no existence, no rightful being. So therefore, they just said that this dude didn't have no rights to begin with to even come to court. So that was the whole thing about the fight. You know what I'm saying? They kept going under this non-person act. You know what I'm saying? Which where he had no real rights under a non-person because you're non-existent. Because you had no nation, no nationality. So they blew that by everybody's minds. And I said, oh my God, they just told everybody on national TV. And like I told some of my friends at work, you know what I'm saying? I said, you guys know what color of law means? They're like, no. And then I told them, I'm like, what? And it blows their mind away. But it's when they all collectively come to an agreement, you know what I'm saying, to break the law. You know what I'm saying? Just because they're doing somewhat law. And then we all knew it was a rig when it was six jurors. All of a sudden, there's six jurors. And then they're talking about the peers. And they said, oh, Trayvon couldn't have no peers because he was dead or he wasn't presentable. So you mean to tell me it's a civil case, two sides, only one side had jurors and the other side doesn't? So that didn't make no sense to me. But, yeah, like I said, we just go with it. So that's what they give us. So we take it, so that what goes on, even with the money, you know what I'm saying? When we accept that them new 20s and the new 50s, you know what I'm saying? It was all a note on us to say that, okay, it's okay to do this, you know what I'm saying? But the people who really had the real power, we gotta really do some real work with it, because if not, we gonna see our cousins that's not Moors, that's not declared Moors, or you never know, it might start hitting home or start getting closer, you know what I'm saying? This is a matter of time, because like I said, we already outnumbered. You know what I'm saying? We already outnumbered, so we got to start getting smart real quick, because it's getting worse. And like, I can't believe I was just looking at what was going on and coming to information. And I told my mom, I told my mom while I had my girl, and I was just like, I'm telling some people that I work with or used to work with. You know, I left my job like 2 weeks ago. I said, you know what? Forget this, man. I'm about to just go ahead, pull the stops. I'm about to let the spirits take me, because my mind ain't here. You know what I'm saying? So I got to get to where my spirit gonna take me, and to where I feel where I'm supposed to be. Right now, I feel like I'm being somewhere around forced to be, or was being. You know what I'm saying? So, like I said, and everything's unfolding. I'm just like, oh my God. You know what I'm saying? It's crazy. And then, you know, I'll tell a couple people about the Tea Party, and they're like, oh, the party. And they're like, yeah, that's we cricket in that system. You know what I'm saying? Because the Moors, Reverend Jesse Jackson, who doesn't address himself that, or Jesse Jackson, or Charlton, you know what I'm saying? How could you be a part of two parties and disguising in one party, you know what I'm saying, and telling the people a bunch of lies? We got to come to a stop on this. You know what I'm saying? When that man got on TV and said he was the co-leader and co-founder of the Tea Party, which is a Confederate group, consumers group, or whatever you want to say, consumers movement, lawful movement, you know, and then come back and tell us that we have to fight for our civil rights when they actually know that we have a whole different constitution and that we don't even know about that. Right there blew my head off. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna call some people and do this paper. But anyway, my name is Aurelius J. Pet Thomas L. And y'all wanna hit me up on the email, and I'm trying to keep going.
All right, brother. We certainly appreciate you bringing that information up. And
all right. Get you well, email, have a good day in hotel, brother.
Hotel. Okay. Area code 541.
Thank you again.
You
greetings.
Greetings, sister.
Say, I have two questions. I was distracted earlier by some of my family coming in the front door when my number was called, and so that's why I was a little bit not making my points as clearly as what I would like to. The first one is kind of a random question, but I have my great curiosity about it. I'm a Native American breed, so caught between the two, the white nations and the Native American nations. And I have grown up and learned to forgive and love both sides and find my way and I have a good foundation. I understand that the Moore nations were here first before the Native Americans. Therefore, are we part of the sovereign Moore nation, or are we sovereign within our own selves? I understand that each individual person is spiritually, not according to the straw man, but just, you know, for ourselves, we are sovereign. So how is it that we are sovereign through the Moorish nation and our Native American tribal affiliation nations? How does that work, and how do you really put a title on that?
Well, the way I view sovereignty is I always view it from a national perspective. I hear a lot of people use the term of being sovereign, but I think what their meaning is and what they're trying to say and what they're trying to convey is they want to be regarded as a free individual on the land. And that is the only way that I can view that when you're talking about individualism. But I look at sovereignty belonging to nations, and you want to, I always look at that in the context of a Moorish, as a minister of education for the Moorish government. I look at the Moorish government as striving toward national sovereignty. Now, as far as the people who are regarded as the American Indians, American Natives, or what have you, I think that they have to look at themselves when it comes to the word sovereignty from a national perspective. But now, as an individual, we all strive toward being free. Everybody wants to be free. On this land, they don't want to. Nobody wants to have any restraints. And I think what happens is, I look at the term sovereignty as being something that a person, or as an individual, not a person, attaches to themselves when they're striving to be free. And that is the best answer that I can give you for that particular question.
All right, and that dovetails into my next question. I was born overseas in Germany. Both of my parents were military officers. And I have my original birth certificate with the embossed golden seal, as well as I actually have three, and I cannot find, or nor do I know where to look for or what would be my CUSIP or CUSPID number. I have the hospital, tactical hospital birth certificate with my original birth date on it, and I have the a second one from Germany, and it is listed with a different birth date. I was born in May, and the other one is listed in June. And then I have the Department of State Foreign Service of the United States of America with the vice consul signature on it and the raised embossed seal on the robin blue paper. And the birth being recorded in November, 2 years later, even though it does say that my original birth date on there, and not on one of them can I find any numbers except for the one on, that is printed and typed in the blue ink on the robin blue paper. And there is a form number, it's form FS-545. And then there is a date number under that of 11-17-59, and then and that's on the left side, and then on the right side is a long digit number also with dashes and a GPO at the end of it. But none of this is like the birth certificates that have been created here in the States. And so I'm uncertain as to how I can find or go about using that number. Have you any information that would help?
Now, you are trying to locate the CUSIP number. If you look at your birth certificate, look at the face of your birth certificate, and move up to the upper left-hand corner, it should be a set of numbers right in the face of that birth certificate up on the left-hand side. It should be about three or four numbers there. If you see
there
those
numbers. There is nothing there.
Okay.
There is nothing up in the left. These are my birth certificates.
They are birth certificates now, and I've seen them that do not have that number printed there. So you're going to have to go through another means for locating that CUSIP number. And that number is on that birth certificate someplace, but it was originally, they were putting it up on the left-hand side, right on the face of that birth certificate, but they have stopped doing that. So you're going to have to examine or use what numbers you do have there to pull up that bond and get a look at that bond. Now, the website to do that, I think that website is fidelity.com, where you can actually enter that information, enter those numbers in, and to come up with how much that bond is worth, how it's being traded. Now, you say you was born in Germany. So Germany issued the birth certificate. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And so then the original birth certificate is through the United States Air Force 36th Tactical Hospital, and it has the captain, USAF, as the register, and another captain as the attending physician. And then when we came abroad back to the States, then there is the Department of State Certificate of Birth. And that's the one that's in the Robin Blue paper that has the numbers in the bottom left-hand corner and in the bottom right-hand corner.
Okay. All right. Now, what we're going to have to determine, because as far as I know, if Germany is the one that issued your birth certificate, that's where the bond was first created. Now, whether they sold the bond, of course they trade them all over the world on the stock exchange. However, what we need to do is locate exactly where the bond is and how the bond is funded, where. How much money is available on that particular bond, on that first bond that was issued, the first bond? You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
Okay, because that's where we want to concentrate our effort in dealing with that bond. We want to deal with the first bond that was issued when you were born.
I'll play with these numbers and begin looking them up on Fidelity, and then I'll contact you after I've done this thorough research, because I want to make sure that I invest my donation in using the right packets in the library archive.
Okay. Well, once you donate to the archives. There's a ton of information in there on the birth certificate and how to go about locating this, that, and the other. All of that's in video format there in the archives already. So once you donate there, all that information is already there.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And then I also have looked up the number on the back of one of my children's birth certificates, and I noticed that there was no letter next to the numbers. And so apparently they are hiding the numbers, or not the numbers, but the letters now. I have...
Well,
excuse me?
They do all kind of stuff. They are. Once people start waking up to what was going on, they start doing things which birth certificate, not putting certain information on the birth certificate.
Yes, and I understand that every year on Wall Street they also change the rules for how to be able to access putting in the documents for the accepted for value, and that if you don't know those, you can get in a lot of problems, which teach you more lessons and make you smarter and wiser, and I'm thankful for, but I'd rather not have to get knocked in the head anymore to learn these lessons. But also, I have all of the routing numbers that go to the state that has the treasury that holds the bonds for the birth certificates that should tell who the estate manager of those estates are. And I would be happy to post those on my Facebook if you or anyone has an interest in that, as well as I would love to connect with other people who are following you, who are within the Northwest coastal area, so that we can help each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have a wonderful organic farm, and we work on teaching and helping others. And so I offer that assistance out as well. And I once again tell you thank you so very, very much for all that you're doing, and thank you for making invitation to me for this.
And okay. Well, thank you for calling in and letting us know. We certainly
peace.
Appreciate it. Peace.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Charging instrument. And whenever you formulate an affidavit when you're dealing with a debt collector, or if you have to send one to the sheriff or whoever it is you're sending a charging instrument to, you want to make sure that you not only list your points, but you want to list the amount of money you will be seeking in damages as a result of the affidavit that you're sending. The affidavit is always to be sent certified mail with return receipt. That way, you have evidence of the fact that the charging instrument is in their hands, it's been signed, it's been dated, and it has been notarized. Notary acts as a hold the office of Secretary of State when he places his signature and stamp on that affidavit. Okay? Your affidavit starts off with the basic story. You want to be brief and to the point in that short story, and then you want to go into your points, and your points should always have the dollar amount printed, and in parentheses, the actual number amount printed there. And, of course, you're going through legal means of seeking the sum in damages, and you want to include your punitive damages in that affidavit. You're always giving them from 20 to 30 days to respond to the affidavit. Of course, if they do not respond to the affidavit within that length of time, that means that the affidavit stands as truth. Okay? So this is a very, very important tool. If you go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com, you scroll down on the face of that webpage, and you will see a video there. And he will tell you the difference between the gun and the paper, and the importance of an affidavit and how it is designed. You can actually look at the basic format right there on that video where he shows you what an affidavit looks like and how to go about designing your affidavit. Okay? So that's very, very important. When you're dealing with the debt collector, if they say you owe them money, okay, you ask them to prove the debt, but you also want to make this under conditions of proof of claim and liability. Okay, you cannot just say I owe you money when I don't owe you money, and I'm asking you to prove the debt, and I will be seeking damages in amount of X amount of dollars if we have a problem. Okay, so we'll put that into that affidavit, and I'll send that certified mail with return receipt. And just to recap, when you're dealing with your debt collectors by phone, you want to you can tell them that the telephone this conversation is being recorded. Never give out any information. Certainly never give them any account information on your bank account or any of that nature stuff. You want to find out exactly who they are and prove the debt. So now we come to getting them to send us what they say we owe them, put it in writing, send it in the mail. And, of course, as soon as you get it, just remember in your mind the three-day rule applies. Go ahead and examine what they got, and then do your response to what you got from them. Okay, it's very important that we stay on top of this thing. When dealing with your debt collectors, we cannot let them send us something and then we just throw it to the side and say, well, I'll get to that next week. No, we don't want to do that. We want to be diligent in our affairs. We want to deal with that immediately. We want to deal with them immediately. Jump on that and take care of that. Okay? Now, we're winding down. If anybody else got any questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand. I'll open up the lines. You can tell us what's on your mind. And we can get it on out there, okay? Now's the time. And keep in mind, August the 16th through the 18th, right here, Jacksonville, Florida, Summit of the Moors.
Greetings. I'd like to invite you out to the Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th, 2013, located in Jacksonville, Florida. 3 days of executing and planning of executive plans for 25-year agenda, operating as an economic unit. The presenters will be Shem L. of the Tamarain 2 Project,
Dr. Ali Muhammad and Minister Inky of the Black Genetic Tour. Sundiana Amael, Professor Isef Dean Ham L, Tahaka Amana L, Abundance Child, Fatima, the Alchemist Shabazz, Messiah L, and more. Topics will be the execution of urban geoponics, creating independent distribution systems, creating independent economic systems, genetics, private security force, the wholesale and manufacturing of natural products, Morristown, creating one in every state, Morris Eastside Farms, creating one in every state. You do not want to miss this summit. It is very enlightening, empowering, and most of all, it's applicable. Everything that we talk about, we do. Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th. Log on to www.summitofthemoors.com. You can register for free. The summit is always free. You can also get your hotel room, which will be on the river at the Wyndham Hotel. That's www.summitofthemoors.com. The summits are always free. See you at the summit.
It's now official, Moors. The brothers and sisters have been contacting me all over the United States asking me, when are you guys going to get something to help us deal with the Internal Revenue Service? I'm here to tell you, officially, we do. Go to http://www.newfreehelpgroup.com. You see, to get rid of the Internal Revenue Service package right there waiting on you. Okay, now this is the breakdown of this thing. What we got to understand is the Internal Revenue Service is a private corporation not connected to the United States government as a country, and is operating illegally. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com, and if you're interested in doing that, go ahead and contact me before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Get rid of the Internal Revenue Service packages, now officially available.
So he smiled at me and he started hitting on me. And I said, "Say, mister, I already got a man and he's good to me." So he said, "It ain't nothing wrong with having a cup of coffee, baby." And my heart got in the way of my mind. And the devil got into me. And we sat down and he rapped to me over the coffee. And he's telling me all those sweet and innocent things. And you know what? Right there, I lost my heart to him.
but now she's gone. And I just want to let him know how I really, really feel. Now I'm sitting here with pencil and paper with tears in my eyes because I still love him. And I just want to let him know, you, oh, you made me leave my happy home. That's what you did. You took my love and now you're gone somewhere. Everything I've been for you. There for you.
Yeah.
winding down. We only have 10 minutes left, and if you got a question or comment, go ahead and raise your hand. However, I want to bring out one more time. In order to understand what's going on inside the United States, we're going to have to have some background information. So I encourage you, for those of you who have not requested my free articles, go ahead and do so, and we'll send these articles by email. Just send your request. Just say, Tahaka, send me those articles you mentioned on your broadcast. Now, send them to you as an attachment. Send that to Tahaka53@hotmail.com. That's TARAHAKA53@hotmail.com. And we will rush that right there to you. Now, we will be back Sunday evening, and we will be dealing with student loans. And Sunday, and we're going to try to do Monday, and I'll deal with this mortgage issue again from a whole different angle. So make sure that you tune in Sunday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, because the call-in number is 310-982-4184. That's the number to dial to be heard right here on Morse Talk Live 100. Get a chance to ask your questions, and we do our best to try to answer your questions, most of which the answers are already found in my archives. But nevertheless, you get a chance to ask your question. We'll be happy to try to assist you. Sunday evening, right here on Morse Talk Live 100, we will be dealing with the student loan situation. And which is a major problem inside the United States, because people are being tied into these loans. They're not getting anything out of it, not getting education. Then if they do get a degree, there are no jobs, but then you are stuck with this big debt over your head. And these are young kids that's burdened down $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 in debt. I mean, this is ridiculous. And so what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to get this information out so that these people can know that there is a remedy for this thing. You can cancel these contracts. You go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com, and the solution to do that is there. But we're going to put this information on for you Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Morse Talk Live 100. Ladies and gentlemen, we got down to the last few minutes, so I'm going to go ahead and shut this thing down, and I certainly appreciate all of you that have come out and who continue to listen to my broadcast. We make every effort to try to provide solutions to the problem. We don't just want to get on here and just be talking a bunch of junk. We don't do that over here. What we deal with is the problem and the solution to the problem. That's what we do, okay? Now, Wednesday evening, don't forget, contract law, Mortgage American Government, right here at Blog Talk Radio. So make sure you tune in to that broadcast as well. Okay? I've been your host, Tahaka Amana Elbe, and the next time you all have a good day.
Rain drop. going strong. I've been walking around town with a smile on my face.
Real inside, I cried. So when you love, you know I tried.